Beautiful chanting voice of Lisa Raphael. I'm Sherry Edwards, and thank you for joining us for Sound Health Radio on BBS Radio. I'm just delighted that you could be here. We're going to talk with Lisa a little bit more in the show. We have hopes of bringing you information that will provide options and information for dominion over your health. We are coming to you recorded. I am in a studio trying to handle seven things at once here. I usually have an assistant, so I feel a little clumsy right now. We're not going to be taking calls since this is recorded, but you guys can write to us at radio@vocalprofiling.com, and we will be giving you websites and numbers to get in touch with Lisa also. Her information is on the site at bbsradio.com. Our show is pre-recorded just for today. We're usually live, but you can go to Sunday nights at 6 Pacific, 9 Eastern, and click on the show information, and you can get a lot of context about each of the shows. And the archives are up. Don has promised that they are going to be up within just a few days of when we run. So if you miss a show, you can always go back. We've done some summaries for those, so you know which ones to watch. We do have a couple of announcements, short announcements, because we really want to get to Lisa's information. We have had so much fun with these online vocal prints that we have put together some free group settings for you. We're going to be working with Don to do that through BBS Radio, but we also are doing it on our own until that's up and ready. We're doing this every few days now as the demand comes in. We try to keep the classes really small. They're an hour long, small so that we can do some of the vocal prints of the people who are calling in. So you can go to Nutra Sounds, N-U-T-R-A Sounds, .com. The schedule's posted there. It's absolutely free, and we would love to have you join us. Okay, on to our guest. Lisa is, well, there's such a long list here. She's a a singer, a teacher, an author, a sound healer, facilitates others to self-healing and change. She's a sound energy educator. And she does sacred chants and harmonic chants. Lisa, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Sherry.
Your voice is just absolutely beautiful. And I am having trouble shifting information here all over the place. So I feel a little clumsy in doing this. So bear with me, folks. Lisa, I've looked at your website. We met last year at a conference. And you had such an incredible story of your own unfolding and then how you help other people. And that's what I'd like to talk about today, because here on BBS Radio, we like to provide people tools for self-health, but also provide them the opportunity to meet new people and how the new people can interact with them. And as we talked before the show, you do sound healing, self-healing from the inside out, where we do it with research and computers and that kind of thing. So they hear a lot about me talking about what I do. So what do you do, and how did you get started? I've read it, but I think it'll be better for people if it comes from you.
Oh, well, thank you. I actually started by accident, which is, I think, the way many healers begin. I don't know how many times you or someone else has been sort of struck by something, but that's what happened to me. I was struck by an experience when I was in Nepal that really changed my life and made me aware of the fact that I could do something I never believed I ever could do, which was to actually put my hands on someone else and that they got better. And the experience of that and the experience of being in Nepal and realizing that I was not the person that I thought I had always been my whole life. I had really been very comfortable in who I had been before up to a point. But then I started to become more and more dissatisfied with what I believed was the world, not realizing I had become more and more dissatisfied with myself. So it took, for me, going to a very sacred country and experiencing a very difficult trip filled with an enormous amount of challenges and hardships, and for me to become really frightened of if I wanted to even live and who was I really, for me to go down to the bottom, in a way, of my spiritual identity and to really examine that in such a way that I couldn't stop myself from opening my heart. And when my heart opened, all of this new world sort of began for me, and I could see the world differently. And it wasn't the world's fault that I was unhappy. It was that I needed to become a heartfelt being, and then the world and I would be just fine. And so that's been my journey for the last 20 years, is to constantly keep the heart open and experience the tenderness and the kindness and the preciousness of life, and to listen. I think the reason sound and the use of sound as a medical science and as a process for learning about yourself is so incredibly powerful is because it forces us to really listen from a place inside of us that we perhaps never was able to listen to from before, except when we were in the womb. In the womb, we're listening from the innermost place of our body. We are the vibrating heartbeat. And once we are in this larger world and we lose that relationship at such an intimate level, it takes work to return to feeling that inside of ourselves. And that, to me, is a spiritual journey.
Like living from the inside out.
Right. It's allowing that each person is really their own country. They are their own ruler. They're their own servants. They're their own workers. Inside of them, that identities of all the aspects of how you live in your world and how you make your world happen actually all come from within you. And that how you listen to yourself and how you express what you believe is the relationship that makes your life become what it becomes. So living from the inside out means touching into that and becoming more receptive, really, to your own instincts, to your own beliefs, and certainly to your own radar system that shows up about your health and your well-being.
So you were not a healer before you went to this trip to Nepal?
Oh, no.
What made you go on the trip?
Well, it was a spontaneous experience. It was the first time it ever happened to me like that. It's happened to me many times since. I had just suffered a very difficult accident, and I was in a lot of physical pain. I was in the process of finishing a divorce. I was in deep emotional pain. And I had lost my will. And my stepbrother was going to Nepal. He was building a clinic there, and he said, if you go with me to Nepal, it'll change your life. And I had no desire to go. But I had met a friend, and he said that he was going to Toronto, where my brother lived. And I said, oh, my brother lives there. In fact, you should talk to him because he's going to Nepal. And in fact, I'll go with you, which was a spontaneous moment. I had no intention of going to Toronto. But I find myself on a plane, and we're going, and we're at his apartment, and my friend walks in, and my brother says, you know, if you go to Nepal, it'll change your life. And the fellow and he start to talk. And I realize that he's really going to go. And he says he's going to go. And I don't want my friend to go to Nepal and change his life with my brother without me. So It was really more of an ego trip. I just didn't want to be discluded. Something in my, and again, that was the spontaneous moment. I said, well, then I'm going to go too. Not realizing that those spontaneous moments were actually my soul just breaking through my own filter system and directing me on what it was I needed to do in my life. And that was when it all began.
Well, you said you were really frightened. Was that from something physical or something inside you?
Both. Before I went, I had an experience with a girlfriend who liked to do healing work, and she invited angels and guardians to assist you. And I had never experienced that before. I hadn't been exposed to that kind of world. And when she did this, two guardians showed up in my meditation. And I had started to become very frightened before I went to Nepal. And I asked them in a meditation what that was about. And they said that I had died there, that in a previous life I had fallen off a cliff, and helplessly lying there, I was eaten by a tiger. And I thought, oh, I'm going there to die. And because I wasn't on the spiritual journey at that time, I didn't know about spiritual death. I thought this was real. So I wrote my will, and I told my children I might not come back. And I prepared my life as if I was going there to die. And, of course, I did. And it was the beginning. Is that too esoteric, or is that...
That's very esoteric. So how would... So you definitely would encourage people to follow their spontaneous moments?
What I'd encourage them to do is listen to them. You have to listen to them. Your inner system is trying to tell you something, and how you listen to yourself is the key. You don't have to do what you're hearing yourself say. But by listening, you begin the process of evolving your own limitations. You begin to understand that there is a wisdom inside of you. And then you have to develop how do you respond to that wisdom. For me, it was a very dramatic trip. And I teach people that it doesn't have to be so drama-filled, and it certainly doesn't have to be as painful as what I went through. It's really about listening. And then
when I listen to you talk, it feels like you were a seed and you were dried up and cracked open, but you took that opportunity to grow and blossom.
Yes. You have to water yourself.
Yeah. Your voice is like a blue, soft petal.
Oh.
Very nice.
What a beautiful image.
So do you just teach people in your classes to sit down and listen?
Yes, in all kinds of ways. So first you have to listen to what your fears are, but we don't actually talk about it. You experience it through breath. We do some talking. But most of the talking is an opportunity for people to express their desires more than their fears. And as they express their desire, their fear is going to come up. And then holding the space of allowing that fear is a natural attribute, that this isn't something to shut us down. It's just something you walk through, basically.
Do you think this is something that people need a teacher for and then they can do it on their own, or is there a set step that you, techniques that you teach people?
I teach a lot of different techniques, and a teacher is helpful. I think finding the right teacher is finding someone who is living the values on what they're teaching. So it could be a friend. It could be a parent. It could be a stranger as much as it could be a spiritual teacher. When you find people who are living the values they are teaching, and those values encompass kindness, receptivity, and generosity, then you have a teacher. Now, if you want to learn something more, if you want to learn techniques that can be helpful to other people or can help break through limitations, then you would go to a teacher who is trained in that. Or or you just listen very carefully to what comes to you when you're in meditation. You trust that whatever those little voices are that are showing up have use, and you begin to recognize that there is this partnership. It's not just that we are victims listening to ways on how to become wise. It's that we're already wise, and we need to take the time to believe it. So a teacher can help you to take the time, or you can do it.
It sounds like you're also talking about a person who's very authentic,
yes.
Who's very real. There's some confusion, I think, when some people say one thing and then you watch them do another, then you begin not to trust anything they're saying. So you're saying find somebody who's very authentic from within, as an example, then you can be that. What I'm going for here is I think so many people put themselves aside for what other people think of them or want from them, and this technique of learning to live from the inside out, whether it's through music or color or song or bubblegum, you know, whatever it is, I think that's where what people are searching for. I think that's where we're running to on this planet. Just look at the success of The Secret and some of the movements that really train you or teach you that it's okay to go in and be exactly who you are.
Even in the movie What the Bleep, you know,
yes.
the marriage, you know, you and I spoke briefly about this, the marriage of the spiritual and the science is now becoming more accessible. It's becoming more palpable. You can begin to say, oh, yes, physics is, you know, there's a use that we can apply that knowledge in our everyday life, which means that what we believe is what we're creating. And how we believe it, how we care, is the core of the decision-making that makes the difference between a life that has joy and a life that has difficulty. You know, we can live an authentic life by being honest. However, living an authentic life that is understanding that the nature of living includes suffering, it includes fear, it includes those difficulties, makes a difference. It says that my teacher doesn't have to be perfect, and it says that I don't have to be perfect, but my intention is that I am kind. My intention is that I am loving and caring. Those kinds of manifestation decisions make a huge difference in the amount of joy you have in your everyday life.
And being active and reactive and proactive, and this is
mm-hmm.
taking that stand where I think what you're saying, where we used to believe and give over our power for our health and our government to other people, and I think people are waking up and saying, hey, that old stuff isn't working. We got to do it from in here.
It's also the health of your own identity.
Yeah.
We have been trained for a long time that our identity is what is given to us from the circumstances and the DNA and the environment of our life, and that's true only to a point. My identity now certainly relates to who I was as a child, but the way I use my life now is very different, and it's a product of my re-understanding or my re-remembering a more authentic way of being myself. That helps me when I'm ill. You know, if I get ill too, and if I'm ill, how I love my own illness is a very interesting conversation to have.
Mm-hmm.
What is it that says that I can embrace without needing to become afraid, that I can accept and yet also believe in the truth that the wholeness that is underlying everything is still there? And it can help me to heal. You know, what you're doing, Sherry, by giving the voice imprints and by letting people know that all of this lives inside of them, how their voice is speaking, how they're thinking lives inside of them, and you're giving them real evidence to that. I mean, it's just...
I believe people can't hide from their own voice.
Yeah.
And so we really think this is an active choice about finding out who you are and how to be authentic from that. I think people lost it. But I also have a comment about this perfection thing you're talking about. I think we are striving all for perfection from TV commercials and acceptance from your husband and neighbor and whatever. And if people were really perfect, and you can look at this by looking at the frequencies in their voice, if they were perfect, they would be zero. They would spontaneously combust, and they wouldn't be here. So whoever's still left has something yet to learn. And so nobody here is perfect.
Well, I teach in my class that imperfection is the beauty. And
yes.
There's a wonderful, wonderful lyric, Leonard Cohen lyric, and he says, "There is a crack in everything. That's how the light gets in."
Yes.
Yes. And that imperfection is our beauty. It's what makes us unique and different. And it's what gives us the opportunity to strive for something better. So without the imperfection, you're right. We wouldn't be here.
We just need to find the grace from every experience, no matter what it is. I can't believe that God or the universe, and I have this strange idea of what God is, but I can't believe that God would allow anything to happen that wasn't important and wasn't in line with everything else. We just need to find a way that we weren't paying attention to what was going on. But I think God is every sentient thought, every sentient frequency of everything, the flowers, the rocks. I just think rocks are slow life forms. And you put them all in one pot, and that's sentientness, and I think we're all a part of that. We're all connected to that, and we're all constantly working to balance and play and harmonize with each other. And I think that's what your incredibly beautiful chanting does, harmonizes the soul and looking at it. When we look at chanting here in the research lab, for a few minutes, it just scatters the person who's listening to it, and we thought, oh my God, that's not good. But then it sort of reboots them into perfection a little bit later. It's like a crash and reboot on your computer. What's the intention when you, I got 1,000 questions here. What's your intention when you chant and tone with people about their soul? Is it release? Is it comfort zone? I mean, you tell me, because I am in awe that how you can go to your soul with a chant. And I didn't believe it. You know, we talked in Santa Fe, and I really didn't believe some of the chanting and music that was going on. But I remember listening to some of your music and just, like, getting inside it and finding this space inside of me and just allowing the other stuff just to ooze out and leave me alone.
That's right. That's right.
Do you do that for people? Do you teach them to do it? How do you do it? What can people expect? I mean, I'll come back to these questions if you don't catch them, but, I mean, if you don't answer them, because I have a million here. The difference between sacred chants and harmonic chants, is there a difference in questions at once, isn't it?
It's a great question. Let me just try and go through a couple of them. For what I do, I'm very engaged in the harmonic aspects of the sacred chants. My voice and my soul seem to have a very deep relationship to a sense of space that makes it very possible for people to become entrained through my voice into that sense of space. So the fact that they open, and by the process of opening, you're right, there is a deconstruction that takes place. So just imagine you have a balloon, and you have a limited amount of space inside the balloon, and then more air comes into that balloon. The old framework of how that balloon held itself together is stretched out, and something changes internally in order for that to happen. When we're working with the sound, it's like the balloon disappears. And now you've grown larger, and you're also connected to something that was outside of the balloon. And you're feeling that it's a very fragile, exquisite kind of network of life force that is everywhere. And using the harmonics, because of the structure of the harmonic itself, because of the characterology that I hold, what I'm thinking when I'm singing, which is really about wholeness. My focus is wholeness. My classes, when I started teaching, I developed a program called The Five Worlds, and it was a consecutive series of classes. The first was the warrior, the sword. It's called The Sword, and it's about learning courage and how to step forward out of where you are. And the second was the mirror, which is where you learn to self-reflect and see that how you are seeing yourself might be how someone else is seeing you. You might be looking through someone else's eyes and not your own. And then the cloud, which is the ever-changing relationship to spirit, the veil, which is the place of fear, mystery, and the unknown, and then the diamond, the place of clarity and balance. And I taught this for many years. I still teach it, but I then moved on and started on a series of classes that were very geared towards sound, days of sound, days of the heart. And then I moved into what I called the wellness, wholeness programs, the programs that really held the nature of wholeness as accessible and real, and that we are all whole, and that we can be in grace at all times, and we don't have to fight it. And the reason we fight it is a good reason, but we don't have to have that reason if we don't want it and if we're ready to give it up. So people who would come to my classes would find me chanting and singing with the harmonic sounds as well to help support their opening, and then they also learn to sing and chant. But they're really learning exercises that give them a new perspective, that give them a way of seeing themselves with a kind of new platform, where they don't have to feel like they can't do something, where they feel kind and they feel nurtured, but they feel strong. They feel like they can accomplish anything, because they really can. And then it's up to the choice. What do you want to accomplish? How do you want to use this wonderful gift? And so I've developed programs recently in the wholeness program to help people to cope with their great new awareness and to figure out what they want to do with it.
What do you think?
Go ahead. No, I was going to say, so in all of this, the sound is crucial, because for me, the sound changed me. Doing all the chanting changed me. Listening to the harmonics changed me. My willingness to sing the way I sing changed me. My willingness to love what I do changed me. And those things I live. So when people come to the classes, they see it's not a foreign matter. It's not just an idea. It comes through gentleness. It doesn't come through force. It comes because you're willing to let it happen. And the sound does that too.
Do they have to have talent?
No, you don't need any talent. I didn't know I could do any of this. I mean, it's nice to have talent. I certainly have people in my classes who are talented and people who have never made a sound. And there is no difference. It's really about learning who you are. And everyone, there is no greater than or lesser than of any human being in the world. No one is greater or lesser than anyone else. It's just knowing that the grace of that lives inside of you is equal to all the grace in the world. I mean, that's the revelation, because then you realize everyone is beautiful. You don't really have to struggle like you might think you might have to do. But, you know, it's esoteric. You know, it takes a while to get there and find applicable ways to make it work in your everyday life. You go to work and you have a boss who really is making your life miserable. The question is, can you hold the being that you are in such a way that your wound doesn't show up and interfere in your ability to have grace in that moment? So that's personal work. That's going in and seeing that something inside of you has been pushed and looking at that and saying, that's something inside of me that's being pushed, and this guy is certainly pushing it, but it's not his fault that he's pushing it. it's that I am being pushed. And so you begin to question your own way of thinking about yourself through your own voice. You know, how do you feel about this guy? How do you feel about you? That's what therapy is, in a way. It's listening to your own voice.
Would you like to give people your contact numbers?
Oh,
sure. How to get in touch with you?
My website is www.lisaraffel, LisaraFrankEl.com. And you can easily reach me through there. You can also call me at 510-654-3234. And if you're in California, please come to a concert that we are producing next week for the spring vernal equinox. I have started doing this. I really felt that there needed to be more community experience. I'm in Oakland. And so every equinox now, I have gathered incredible musicians for chanting and for celebrating ourselves in a way that we feel ourselves in alignment with the nature around us, with the rhythm of nature. So I have people from all walks of life and all kinds of music, and including the audience singing in a ritual in the middle of the concert, so people can feel themselves in this harmonious space. And it's been great. So we have one next week, and if you're interested, that information's on the website. So.
And the schedule of that and times and everything's on your site?
Everything is on the site. You know, I'm presenting at the New World Sound Healing Conference that's going to be in San Francisco. I'm actually giving a presentation, a keynote on living as healing, but from a point of view of the body as instrument, that the what we are, who we are in the body, just what we're talking about, how we use this body is the instrument of our life. But when we play the body, when we understand the nature of the harmonics and the harmony that lives inside of us through our spirit and our emotion and our physical sense and our intellectual sense, when we understand the spiritually unifying experience of all of them, then we are an instrument that can really play quite a song, you know?
What do you think is driving people in absolute droves to seek this kind of esoteric or ancient, whatever kind of healing you call it? What do you think is pushing them toward that?
Two things. One is deep loneliness. We have a very lonely experience in this country. We've lost our experience of real caring. And the communities, except in really unique situations, certain church groups or certain community gatherings, most people live in environments, where they don't really have enough intimacy. So that's driving them. Also, dissatisfaction with the way the world is going. 1 second. I think there's a dissatisfaction in people from the way they see their life and the way they see politics leading the world and the way they see business taking over, and people feel marginalized. So there's, in the Great Renaissance, it came out of the Dark Ages. It didn't come out of everyday living being normal. It came out of compression. And most creativity comes out of compression. It comes out of a contraction inside of us. And so I think that's what's happening. There is a tremendous contraction in terms of free will thinking. And so there's a lot more aggression toward free will thinking. The internet's a great example of that. It's trying to find new ways to connect, and God or universe or spirit is a metaphor of that as well, like the internet is a metaphor of spirit. It's all about trying to connect and how you make the decision to do that really can lead you to the esoteric arts places quickly, because the esoteric arts are really about your formation. All of the sciences, whether it's Kabbalah or even the indigenous arts of Native American or the ancient Egyptian or the Tibetan. I was just in Mongolia this past summer presenting about sound at an international shamanic conference. And my first work was in shamanism. All of those aspects are about trying to find beauty, trying to find truth in the world. So it would be natural that people who feel marginalized or feel isolated would have a calling to want to correct that. And the esoteric arts actually are an exquisitely proven method. I mean, these arts have been around for thousands of years for good reason, because they really do reveal to you a much deeper understanding of who you are.
So I think what you're saying is you're teaching people to begin a relationship with their soul self.
Yeah. Oh, you do it so well in a short sentence.
Thank you. If someone was to come to, well, it's divided into two things. First, a workshop or a lecture, and then an individual session. What could they expect? What would happen there?
There are two different forms that I use. I teach in two institutes in San Francisco. At the Psychoacoustic Institute, I teach sound healing with the voice. It's a very specific class that teaches people to become vocal sound healers. And it deals with boundary and ethics and the relationship that you have to sound, and also the capacity that you have to make sound and understand what you're doing. Then I teach part-time at the California Institute of Integral Studies in embodiment, ways to feel yourself really in yourself with grace and boundary and balance, and I use sound with that too. The most powerful way to study with me is through my own classes. And on the website, I put up the schedules for those classes and where I teach them. They're either in Florida, in the West Palm Beach area, in the Netherlands, in a wonderful, beautiful city called Maastricht, right on the Belgian border, or here in Oakland. And sometimes the classes are one day at a time, and sometimes they're more of a weekend. And I'm looking to put together a four-day retreat coming up next year to do the whole Five Worlds program so people can do it all at once. What they get is a small class where they are treated from a place of their own wisdom. So whatever they're bringing to the class is very critically important. It's not like they have to give up everything they know to be here. But they do have to surrender to a deep listening. And so the class begins with a shamanic ceremony where I'm giving sound directly into them and helping to tune their body so that they can have a physical experience of that tuning. And that from their own experience of being able to receive that, they can start to tune for themselves what it feels like when they make their own sounds differently. They can listen differently. And then from there, we go into whichever program I'm teaching. There's usually movement. There's always sound. There is an intellectual component, really, to understand what it is what we're talking about. So in the sword, we really address the warrior and the issue of what comes up as we think about the warrior and how that stops us from becoming courageous. So there's an element of that. And then there's partnering. People work with each other with sound and also in different exercises that might have to do with how you hold grace or how you actually feel yourself embodied through different imaging in your body and how you can use those techniques at any time in your life. My goal is that people live a joyous life and that they use these techniques often for themselves, however it serves them best, in every circumstance. So if somebody is giving a talk before a large group of people, there's a way to feel your breath or there's a way to feel your body where you can feel that relaxation and deep connection to yourself. And that's what the classes really do. They help people to feel strong.
Do you ever use instruments or do you have people use their voice?
Most of the time it's the voice. Sometimes we do drumming. I do teach about the rattles. The rattles are really important. And I also teach about the use of other instruments, any sound. You know, you were talking about the slow life form of the rocks. The rocks were my first teachers. There's enormous amounts of earth history in those rocks. And when you think about the fact that we are basically vibrating stardust, it's useful to remember that when you're lying down on top of a big rock, because you can feel that there is an old you in a new kind of way if you just remember that there's this resonance that's taking place between you and the rock. So I sometimes use even rocks on people. I'll help them to ground in different ways or make sounds with them. When I was in Egypt, I've led 4 trips to Egypt, and I would pick up all these different rocks or jasper or different kinds of stone and use them, clicking them together to make different sounds and different echoes that people could feel. You know, it's fascinating. The whole thing is so fascinating. It's endless. I have an enormous library of books of people who work or have worked in sound, and it's delicious to see people pursue that to me, because it means that they want to know themselves in a resonant and harmonic way, without sounding too corny. But it's true. It's really great.
I have 3 or 4 oddball questions here that come to mind. Have you ever run into a culture that doesn't have music?
No.
I couldn't think of one either. And we had Susan Alexandra on the show, and she was talking about how music is programmed in our DNA. And she challenged me to find a culture, any of them, that didn't have music in some way. And
most first language was sung, Sherry.
Mm-hmm. Well, she was talking about even bees have this buzzing musical language.
Oh, yeah. Well, everything is vibrating, so everything is music.
Yes, and even the DNA thing was fascinating to me. Another question, how do you get adults to sing? With all of this perfect music out there, how do you just get them to let go and blah, and do a sound of blah, whatever, you know, comes out?
Well, first we play. I mean, when people work with me, they know silliness is my natural attribute. I love being silly in the class. I love being playful, and I think silliness is really important. To be able to just make faces and have weird sounds coming out. Pauline Oliveros did a wonderful program 1 year at a conference that I was at, where she asked people to deconstruct their name and to really just make these weird, wonderful sounds out of their name. There's that way. There's you can make gibberish. There's ways to just teach vowels. The vowels are great. If you use just vowels as communicating devices, it opens up your voice. It just opens up your throat. And then you can start to put a couple of very specific consonants on it that actually change the energy structure of your body. So you can begin to understand how language came about. That's very helpful when you're teaching people to sing. Placement is easy. I can see, you know, one of my gifts, thank you, Goddess, is really that I have a very highly attuned now vision. So I am very good at psychically being able to see energetic patterns in people. And it's very useful when they're coming to see me as an individual, because I see individuals and also couples. And I can see where they're maybe like you, you know, your work is to find what's not there. And my vision sees what isn't there. So then to find a way to help people to fill that spot with a kind of invitation. Because what's going to come in is the natural attribute of them, but they have to invite it in order for it to happen. You can't force your own growth. You have to invite it. But helping them to find a way to think about it or place their voice in a certain way or make a certain sound to open that channel for them can be very, very powerful. You know, so we do that also in the private sessions.
If people can't get to you, can you suggest something like get in your car and just babble or make sounds or?
Oh yeah. The car is great. It's so private. You know, you don't have to worry about your neighbors.
Just get in there and let something go.
Get in there and yell and squeal. And just if you're hurting your throat, don't do it. You know, there are certain keys. If it hurts, don't do it. If it's stretching and you just feel like, wow, all those kinds of sounds lubricate the throat. And from that, once you feel your throat nice and warmed up, you can just start to really have a great deal of fun. And using the lips, using the tongue, moving your nose around, making it really nasal, making it really wide open. All those things are great to help you to become more comfortable with recognizing that you can make these sounds, and then you can do something with it.
And then change your mouth. I'd like to have a camera on you when you were doing that. They just change your mouth configuration all around so you make all different kinds of things and not just the speech that's coming out of here.
Oh, yeah. Your tongue. When I'm teaching people harmonics, you have four real central things. You have the tongue, the way the tongue opens up and down, the way the tongue goes wide, the way the lips move out, and the soft palate, how you actually move the soft palate in your mouth. And how that air, you can visualize the air into different areas of your head. So you have an enormous orchestra in there, capable of doing unbelievable sounds, you know, if you just play around. Also, listening. This is the other part of listening. Listen to CDs. When I wanted to learn how to do undertone chanting, you know, deep tones of the Tibetans, mm-hmm. I just put on a tape of the Gyoto monks. And I listened to it, and then one day I went, and I went, oh, you can do that. And then I started to play with it. It's the listening, you know, mimic. We're really great mimickers. Look at us as children. We're happy to mimic. And as adults, if we mimic that a little bit, it can be a clue. It can give you a key in.
I think it comes natural for some people. When I go to other countries, I pick up English with their English accent from their country. I mean, it was weird.
Yeah, I do that too.
It's just you
I
you
do that all the time. It's, you know.
It becomes their energy. The reason I ask that.
Go on.
What?
Yeah, please go on.
Oh, the reason I ask you the question about doing it on their own and just making sounds, because that tends for me to be a release. And last week on the show, we had a young girl call in, and the show was about laughter and releasing the body through laughter, which is the same kind of thing I think chanting is. And she wrote an email in saying that she lost her job, and she didn't blame them because they didn't have the money in the economy and whatever, but went home and told her boyfriend who didn't work, and now that she couldn't support him, he left. And she's saying, how can I find laughter in that? And I can't afford to come to a workshop and whatever. But this is something that people carry with them all the time. Their voice is usually there, and their ability to manipulate and use the voice is there. And it's very inexpensive.
Sometimes it's too big, though, Sherry. For someone like her, laughter at that moment might be too difficult. Looks like too big a thing to do. So you would hum. So she could hum. And she'd start to feel the sound in her mouth. And then she could, like, go blah, blah, and just sort of let the sound out, letting it just fall out of her mouth. And as she becomes more comfortable with that, she could go, ha-ha, and try it out and see if she could even stand that feeling of is it too much or is it enough? But humming is a perfect way. No matter where you are, humming can start you into sound.
And there's ways you can do it that starts your bones humming and your muscles humming. And
you bet. All that painful experience of your life is in your body.
Yeah,
and you can hum to the spot, too.
Mm-hmm. It's all there, and all this self-healing that we can do, and we forgot. We just forgot how to use it.
Well, we're not alone anymore out in the middle of the prairie or in the middle of, you know, the desert needing to be self-resourceful. And when we were, you know, the Aboriginal can make sound over enormous distances because they need to. They need to sing to each other that distance in order to help understand where everybody is. The experience that we have now is when it's amazing. You know, people are so amazingly flexible. A bad thing happens, you become resourceful, or you withdraw. My hope is that through sound, people remember to become resourceful, because our capability is enormous. Whether we're, you know, we have an earthquake here in California, everybody shows up in their best intention. Wouldn't it be great if we did that all the time? But it shows up. And in that resourcefulness, we feel alive. And then it's like we go back to sleep. The memory takes over as opposed to the action. And after a long period, you don't even remember. And then it takes another wake-up call. Maybe it's just the process of the human being, Sherry. You know, maybe this is just the nature of how we do things. We constantly need to be awoken. But hopefully we remember to be resourceful.
I think, too, that as we begin to grow up, we are discouraged by, oh, you can't sing in tune, you can't play this instrument perfect. And so we begin not to make these sounds and not to express ourselves. Even in moaning, I was visiting a hospital room the other day, and there was a woman in there moaning in her sleep, and her granddaughter was there, and the woman was going to die. It was obvious. And the granddaughter said, oh, Granny, please don't moan. It makes me feel so bad. And I'm thinking, that's how she's dealing with her own pain. And we just are so uneducated about things like that.
We are. You know, my first Native American teacher, Jaime Hood Storm, wrote the book Seven Arrows and Lightning Bolt. He's quite a cherished resource for so much in my life. And he said in the very beginning when I first met him that courage is really a French origin, courage, heart rage. And it takes a lot of energy to let that courage go when you have so much discouragement around you. That's the moment of denial as opposed to the moment of revelation. I mean, if that grandchild had said to her grandmother, oh, Granny, you make any sound you want. This is your life. You know, this is your moment. If it helps you, you know, you want me to sing with you. How about if I sing to you? How about if we sing together? You know, that moment becomes precious instead of discouraged.
Awesome. We only have 3 or 4 minutes left. I want to talk about your music. I want to talk about your album, the book you've written. Can you do that in such a short time?
Yes. Ancient Prayers of Aaliyah is the first CD I recorded after coming back from Egypt. It's filled with healing chants. It really goes through the body, touching all the different chakras, as well as moving into the brain, the pineal gland, the relationship that you have to the pituitary. It opens you. It's really an opening CD. Soul Songs of the Labyrinth was recorded in Grace Cathedral as people walk the labyrinth, and it's really about going in. It has Tibetan bells and crystal bowls and bells and all kinds of things, and I also sing with myself. We went in the studio afterwards and recorded Me with Me. And that's really a journey, and it can be used for meditation or for healing. They both are really for healing. The first one, the Ancient Prayers of Aaliyah, please do not use driving, please. Let it just be your healing. Be selfish. Take it in. My third CD is Space Time Phenomena. It's a compilation of my concerts, which are fun and joyous as well as sacred. And it has everything from world music, didgeridoo, to piano and songs and poems. It's delightful and rich. I was stopped in an airport last year. Someone came over to me and said, oh, I bought your CD, and I took this cut, and I took this cut, and I sent it to my daughter. And I'm thinking, that's really great, but why don't you let your daughter into your world? You know, bring...
Lisa, you're fading out on me.
Oh, no, don't fade out. Hold on. Wait, maybe this phone...
I'm only getting like every other word.
Oh, no, can't be. Are you there?
Well, you sound like you're underwater.
Hello? You there?
I'm here, but it just sounds like you're underwater. We only have a minute or two left. We're going to just leave with your music. I think something might be wrong with Lisa's phone.
How is this?
It's still kind of bubbly.
Bubbly?
I can't understand you, Lisa.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. Well, have people call my website and call me.
We're going to play some of your music and leave with that. And thank you so much for being on the show. Lisa will certainly be back.
Thank you.
It has been an absolute pleasure. Would you like to give people your contact information one more time?
Thank you, and thank you so much, Sherry. It's a joy to talk with you, and I'm so grateful that you're doing this and making people aware of what's going on in the world with regards to sound. So my website is www.lisarafel.com. And the phone number is 510-654-3234. And I am just so grateful and happy that we had this time together.
Well, we'll certainly have you back. And we're going to end with some of your beautiful music.
Well, you'll hear in the music some vocalese that comes from some of the ancient seed syllables and also hieroglyphs and different languages. And so if it resonates with people, it's wonderful to help them to pursue that for themselves, to discover what sounds really resonate for them.
And I hope lots of them get in touch with you. It sounds like you have a way to help them free their soul. Thank you, Lisa.
Thank you, Sherry.